This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 757, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks and being good. Fanboy Pick of the Week, episode 757. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. This is Josh Flanagan.
This is Josh Flanagan. Thank you for reminding me.
You're welcome. We are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics and one of us picks their favorite one. We call it the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, other books in the week, the patron picks, listener mail, hopefully. It'll be fun. It's a good time. Everyone needs fun in their lives. Staring into the infinite void. Being self-aware.
I'm looking at the abyss, and I'm waiting for its return gaze.
Just take me.
And I feel as if the abyss is ignoring me, and so I stare deeper.
The abyss ignores you until it doesn't.
Well, I'm here to say, abyss, I will be right here for when you are ready, and I look forward to your staring back at me.
Jeez, I think we'd be happier after last week. Here's a spoiler warning. We'll be some spoilers. This is a review show. There's spoilers. Exercise some caution. Josh, you had one of those weeks, huh?
Okay, so my pick is Scarant Hood number one from IDW. And I don't really have qualifications other than the fact that I've read a lot of new books this week.
That's what I'm saying. Clearly, I'm looking at the rundown.
Yeah, and I was actually really glad to see there was a good section of number ones. And I had fun reading them. Scarant Hood by written and drawn by Nick Roche. I had no idea what it was. I just said, you know, I looked at it and I thought, that's kind of, I like the art style. And it was about parents and I thought, oh, that's interesting. And it's British. So it's about British parents. And so it's, you know, it's got that little bit of spice of exoticism. Now, if you're listening and you're British, you're like, no, it isn't. But to us, it's just a little bit different. And so that makes it interesting to folk like me. I'm trying to explain this. It is a group of parents who drop their kids off at school. And the main guy, the dad, the mom's not around for some reason. And they are alluding to it, but not really saying why. And he is dropping the kid off at daycare and then has to go back and work for a little while and then comes back to pick up the girl. He's all about his daughter. He really cares whether she's a little cute 3-year-old or whatever. Yep. And they're standing outside of the daycare and they start talking about this place where a kid disappeared under the stage. Like he crawled in there and you know then he never came back and they're like, that's ridiculous. And then one of the other guys goes, no, he was my brother. And so they dare The one dad, the main character, is very skeptical about all of this. And they're like, fine, go under there. So he's like, whatever. And he goes under there, and something weird happens, and then he comes out, and it's 10 hours later.
Hmm.
And, you know, like, somebody else had to... And the scary part is, like, somebody... Whatever is going on, somebody else had to pick up his kid, and his kid, who is already, you know, at the edge of being traumatized by the fact that the mother's not there, is you know, really upset. And I was like, I understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it goes on as they're trying to figure out what this mystery is, and some other kind of weird stuff happens. And I just didn't know... I didn't have any expectations of it, and at the end, I was like, I kind of really enjoyed that. And it wasn't, like, the greatest book ever made, but, you know, when I looked at all the other superhero books, and I enjoyed my books this week. Like, I really had a good time reading, but, like, what am I going to talk about? Am I going to talk about, like, do I have anything new to say about the Iron Man book or about the Superman book? Or, like, I didn't.
I actually did. I had a ton. I wished your show was twice as long this week, because I could have added... Mm-hmm. 20 books or whatever like that.
All right. Well, not that I didn't have anything to say about it, but I didn't really have a reason to make a pick of the week other than, you know, sure. It's the same stuff that I had liked before. And, you know, this book, like, I was like, I really want to know what's going to happen next. And it's just one of those things where, you know, we talk about I'm not a horror person. I'm not really a supernatural person. But, you know, at the end of the day, like, the basis of the characters in this were such that I was like, oh, this is, I've never read a comic book like this. I don't know what this is.
You've opened up the floodgates now, because now the patrons can return to picking horror books.
I mean, they're going to pick whatever the biggest Image number one is in a given week. So whatever. You know, I'm not going to tell you that the bit that we talked about a little while ago about only doing the same kind of books didn't affect me in some way. And it is all, as we've done this forever, this has always been in the back of my mind. Like, I don't want to, like, as a reader, I know what I want to read and I'll read those things. But as a person who does this show, who is, you know, we are directly beholden to an audience that wants something, you know, we have to try other things. And the problem for a long time is that I didn't enjoy most of those things. So I tend to write them off, but I am making a little more of an effort to sort of, like, see what else is going on. It's not like I went too far afield. It's IDW. I probably would have read this anyway, but it's in the back of my mind. I was thinking about it, and I was like, I'll try this, and I'll do this. And, you know, it was a good time. It was creepy. I liked the sort of devotion that this worried father, you know, has about his kid, and how, like, it really is, like, they absolutely love each other, and she's, you know, drawn like a really cute little girl. And, mm-hmm. you know, I would be shocked if Nick Roche isn't a parent. Because it was, you know, it's completely genuine to the experience of that. And at the same time, it's got this weird little small town group of people trying to figure out what this odd thing that's going on is. And it's just a little askew and weird, and the parents are all a little different from one each other. And I did not expect it. You know, like I said, not the greatest comic ever, but in a world where everything is sort of weird, I mean, literally. Everything is repeating every single day, and it's always the same. Like, any diversion in that, you know, that you probably saw this. I had that samurai book a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
You know, anything, it takes the tiniest thing to sort of take you out of the complete and utter, you know, doldrums of the routines that we're all living in right now. You know, we work from home, the kids are here, we go to work, we do, you know, go to work means upstairs. Everything's the same every day. And mm-hmm. so if we're looking at comics, it's funny because people say, well, superheroes are escapist. Well, they're not for us. Right. Superheroes, you know, and talking about them and reading them and thinking about them and all, like, that's as routine as it gets for you and I. So when we get to, you know, break stride on comics and it's, you know, the thing is, when I read a mid-tier new number one, you know, I expect it to be mediocre.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if something becomes a 3.5 or a 4, I'm like, well, that's great. More of that. Because we used to get all these interesting Image series, and they're gone now.
Yeah. It's a different line now.
And Vertigo, you know, like, Vertigo, like, we make this joke that Black Label is just Vertigo, but it actually isn't. You know, like, it's all, like, heavy genre shit in there now. It's either, like, dark superheroes or... you know, horror. That's pretty much what they're doing. They're not doing, you know, Vertigo would do some all over the map. You know, they had a little bit of a lane, but to either side of that, those there would be different things, and that stuff doesn't exist. And you know, like over at IDW, Boom, Oni, wherever, you know, they don't pay the high test page rates that like Vertigo used to, you know, to be able to get that high level of quality where you get a person like Garth Ennis who can sort of do something like that. So these are always sort of crapshoots.
I think everyone's sort of focused on genre.
I get that, because it's hard to sell a Netflix series or movie about, you know, like this group of friends, you know.
Although this sounds like an easy pitch.
It does. No, it totally does. But I think the thing that pushed me over the top was the humanity of it. And I really like the art a lot. It just reminded me of those early 2000s, often British creators who were doing a lot of comics. I'm trying to think of like Phil Bond. It looks like art that would have fit in a Queen and Country arc early on. Like just a little cartoony but with a nice clean line. You know, good acting, strong expressions, but on, you know, exaggerated figures for the most part.
So he did Transformers for a while.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I was thinking that he was the guy who did that weird Clue book, but I don't think he was. And I actually meant to look this up before we started on the show, but, you know, let the work stand
on. He's done a lot of Transformers books.
Yeah. And for a long time, people said, hey, those Transformers books are good. So it's also really interesting when you think about it, like, there's these license books all over the place, and there's people doing them, you know, and you kind of give them a short shrift. And then the other side of those books are people who have talent and good ideas, but they're on a Transformers book, you know, because that was the work that they could get that pays their bills. And every once in a while, somebody gets to do a different thing. I mean, Kyle Starks, who, you know, I had on the show, and he did those really interesting couple of books. You know, he was doing license books for a while. Like, that was the thing. Katie Cook did license books for a while. It's like how people make their livings. But,
He also did another horror book for IDW, it looks like. I'm loading it up, called Monster Motors. Yeah, IDW. So it looks like he's got two lanes.
Yep. He's got a relationship with IDW. So, you know what, though? Like, Boom and IDW and Dark Horse, that's the place to go for sort of alternative stuff right now. Their hit rate's pretty low because, you know, they're really making their money with licensed books too.
Yep.
So you take what you can get. You know, it was like, there was that really great, I don't know what it was called, Ghost Tree, I think.
Yeah.
A year or two ago, you know, like, there's not more series. Like, that was a great series, you know, and I keep looking for more. And that was Supernatural, but it was, you know, character-based and quite lovely and beautiful. So, what are those?
I don't know. Glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Did you read it?
I assume it's... No.
No, okay.
I can't imagine a book less for me.
No, it was totally fine. I just... Sometimes you...
Yeah, no. It came in... I already had 20 books this week.
Yeah.
I already added two books to my pull list after, you know, making the initial list. So I wasn't going to add any more this week.
I didn't think I had that many. I counted them. I had 17.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They were good, though. I mean, everything was pretty enjoyable. One of the books that I added to the list after the fact was Superman Man of Tomorrow number 19, which you made me read. Story by Dave Wild Goss,
I believe. He used to write in. There's two of them. They might be brothers. I'm not sure, but they used to write into the Make Comics podcast, so I remember the name. And then this one was an editor DC, and he's been doing more of these stories in these books.
And Jorge Corona on art, Matt Lopez, Clayton Cowles, and yeah, I mean the. This was really great and also looked terrific.
I mean, yeah.
There were two DC books this week, we're going to talk about both, that had really different than usual art than you would expect from a DC book.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of them. Granted, it was a digital first book, but still.
Digital first book, but it was done in the straight upright comic book page style. You know, it's not like the sideways cut in half page.
Right.
And it was just, I mean, really this format of the Man of Tomorrow books and the, is it Gotham Knight? Whatever these ones, they do the Batman, Superman. They should do a bunch of them now. You know, they're not all hits, but they're sort of like little short story anthologies.
Yep.
And they're really, they can be really interesting. Like I check them, I don't read all of them, but I check them out every time mm-hmm. one comes out to just see, like, is this going to be something kind of cool? And I basically saw the art on this and made it. I was like, oh, that's really fun. So what you've got is Batman and Superman Superman has called up Batman to give him a dressing down at the satellite. And then they're attacked by, like, all of the alternate world versions of themselves. So there's Ultraman from, is it Earth 2? Is that who they are?
I think he's Earth 3.
Okay. And then you got some Bizarros, and you got a Batmite, and you got, I'm not even sure where they're all from. But the point is, there's no Batman who laughs. Yeah, so it's
the
okay.
The Justice Lord, Superman, and the Bizarro Batman and Superman, Ultraman, Owlman. And I guess is that evil Batmite? I don't know who the little ones are. The little baby ones. But they get attacked by all the multiverse bad versions of themselves. And then it becomes a fun switch where Superman fights all the Batman villains and Batman fights all the Superman villains. And it was a really fun story, but man, this Jorge Corona art was great.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, everybody was just if Superman's like this bruiser, he's got a giant chin and he's got giant arms and he looks like a circus strongman. He takes his cape off to fight them.
Yeah.
Hand to hand. He goes into the room with the Red Sun emulator, so he has no power, so he fights them all hand to hand, and Batman's got to deal with beating all the Supermen but who don't get affected by kryptonite. So it was a fun little twist.
It was like a blast of, you know, one issue of fun. In fact, not even, it's 16 pages. The last two panels of the book would have made it one of my favorite books of the week, regardless.
Oh, yeah.
You're a good friend, Superman. I'm looking at it right now. I don't think I've ever actually seen that. Like, I think jokes have been made about it. I'm going to go ahead and spoil it for you, but Batman gives Superman a hug, like, after they've been through this thing, you know. And it was really like a fun, shortish story, you know, about Batman and Superman. And when you get those right, they're good. You know, if you get that right, you get that dynamic right, you have all the fun, crazy stuff. And it isn't about a 12-issue arc.
The face Superman makes when Batman hugs him is terrific. I armchair editing, I would have cut all the dialogue except for "No one will believe you" in the final panel. But
yeah, I can see that.
But it was just really funny gag to end on.
You're right. The dialogue that Superman says there is completely unnecessary.
Yeah. But I laughed out loud when that scene happened.
Yeah. Yep. So that's good, because I texted really you. I said, you need to read this, and I believe you sent me something untoward in response.
I sent
response.
You a GIF telling you to get out.
Yep. Cary Grant. Either way, I'm glad that it worked out.
I had 17 books. I understand. 18 books already. But this was great. And
I don't wield my power unwisely.
Yeah. This is a really fun little one-shot, like what they've all been, like what Josh said. So if you are at all curious, I would check this one out. It was a really fun one. So I don't know what's going on with this next book.
Yeah. So I didn't know what I read Resident Alien, Your Ride's Here, number one from Dark Horse. I did not know what it was. I don't know who the people are. I had no idea. And apparently there was miniseries, or there was, like, this had appeared in Dark Horse Presents. So this wasn't sort of the beginning of the story.
Are you a Resident Alien person?
No.
Like, how did this happen? Did you trip over and find yourself holding this book?
It's a number one. I said, you know what? And I looked at the cover and I thought, that's not offensive. I thought, I'll take a look. And what I actually thought that I would do is read, you know, three or four pages and go, no, this is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So we appear to be in a small town. So a FedEx man is shot by a sniper on the first page. And then you see the cops trying to deal with it. And it's, you know, some small town cop and this thing that hasn't happened. And we head into, a hospital. I guess it's a clinic. And there's just people sitting around talking about their lives. And then a man comes in who is purple. It's Abin Sur. Abin Sur comes in and they talk to him like he's a regular guy. He's gone on a trip to New York and he's back now. And other than the fact that the book is called Resident Alien and he looks like Abin Sur, this is literally just a bunch of people in a small town. And for whatever reason, And it was not, they didn't explain it, which I didn't know. I wasn't aware that it wasn't a first, you know, it wasn't the first introduction of mm-hmm. this. You know, and there's like dating drama and I don't know why, but I was completely like, I don't know. I want to keep reading this. It was so like subtle and low key. And I thought that the, you know, the characters were, I don't know. Maybe it's because it felt like such a regular slice of actual life. Mm-hmm. But I was like, oh, that's nice and romantic. You know, then there's some weird shit at the end where the girl has like a Native American vision quest and something's going to, you know, there's a threat that something's going to come back and take the guy away. I don't really know, but I just thought it was really interesting that it was, you know, we used to take those video pieces and we would put them in the cold open of our convention shows of people in costumes just doing normal stuff.
Yep.
It was a little like that. Mm. Like this guy's the head doctor at a clinic. And the fact that he's an alien isn't really an issue. Like it's there, you can tell. And I'm like, well, I want to see how this plays out.
Right.
Yeah. So, again, unexpected thing. I just really like the tone. If you think about how often like other books are spend so much time explaining everything and talking and being over the top to sort of understand who their characters are. Like the one of the dramas here is that they brought a new guy in to work at the clinic and the nurses kind of don't like him, but he figured out a way to make them like him more. And now the alien guy, Harry, wants to make him the number two. And, mm-hmm. and you know, the town boss guy's like, well, you know, they don't seem to like him. He's like, all right, he's working on that, but I've been working way too much. And I was just like, this is just like watching The Sims. It was like, I don't know. It really had, I liked the art. I thought it was a nice style. And I just thought the tone of it was a welcome sort of change. It was very matter of fact, but with, you know, recognizable characters. And I don't know what it is or where it's going, but I liked how it was presented.
I literally had a conversation with The Sims this week.
Yeah?
That's weird. Yeah.
I bought it like it was like on sale at the very beginning of the lockdown time.
Oh, really?
I bought it for like $3 or $4 or something like that. And it's,
I would not do that. I would buy SimCity in a heartbeat.
Lindsay, my wife, has been addicted to SimCity for a while now. Like, literally.
I would do that in a heartbeat. IPad. But yeah. The Sims, like, and I don't need to be able to listen to Sims conversation, but like, I don't need to clean a virtual house when my own real house needs to
listen,
be cleaned.
Listen, I'm still in the tutorial. I tried to move out of it and I was like, nope, going back into the tutorial.
Did you play it originally?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, you and I think I started and then you were like, we both were at the
so
same
long
time.
Ago.
And we both like, I think we both started and quit independently of each other and then realized it after the fact. And we quit for the same reason.
I literally had a moment and I still remember it vividly where I was stressed about doing my virtual laundry, looked over on my bed, saw real laundry needing to be done. And I was like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
And turned it off and never turned it back on again.
Yeah.
Anyway, Detective Comics 1030. This is the other book this week that had really fun and unusual art. This is written by Peter J. Tomasi. It's art by Bill Cui. Evely, name I've never heard. I think I would have remembered that name. Cosa Matt Lopes, all who also call it Superman Man of Tomorrow, and letters by Rob Lee. And this issue is actually a good primer issue if you're thinking about jumping back on Detective Comics. It is recapping things that have come before and then sort of setting up what's to come with this story arc that Peter J. Tomasi is doing, in which a cop lost his eye in a fight. As collateral damage in a fight between Batman and Joker, this happened in Detective Comics 1027, the big anniversary issue. And so now he's running for mayor on an anti-vigilante platform, but very clearly he's also this villain called, I think, the Mirror. It's kind of dumb, but this issue looked incredible. It had this weird, like, indie retro, somewhat early Tim Sale vibe to it. And I started reading and I was like, what is going on here? And what, it's just such an unusual Batman Detective Comics style to, you know, they don't really experiment on those books with different kind of artists. So I was very surprised.
They used to. I feel like I've met a lot of good artists through there.
Detective definitely more than Batman.
Yes.
You're probably not going to see this. I mean, well, other than when Tom King's writing it and giving, you know, bringing in usual artists on, like, you know, this is where you saw Jock on Batman, Detective Comics, not Batman. But You also find out in this issue that Alfred is only 22 years older than Bruce.
He's pretty young to get in the Butler game.
Yeah, they're looking at a file, and it's Bruce when it's Bruce Wayne age 13 and Alfred Pennyworth at age 35. So if adult Batman is in his early 30s, that would make Alfred in his early 50s.
Do you think that adult Batman is still in his early 30s?
I think they tried to make him younger for the 52, but I think they just fell right back into him being
33. I think he's mid to late 30s. He's like astronaut age.
It depends. I mean, it was always Superman was 29 and Batman was 33. That was always sort of the unofficial number. Now, I'm not saying they adhere to that, but that was always, you know, the DC Comics.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, they should not lock it down. Like,
they should not
do that. But, like, what is it you see in your head?
I see him early 30s.
Really?
For sure, yeah.
I feel like he's too self-possessed for that.
Oh, he's been self-possessed since he was 8.
That's a good point.
Otherwise, he's good.
I mean, injuries. I think the, you know, the late 50s, how old do you think he is in The Dark Knight Returns? Do they say?
He's like 55 or something.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I think that's about right. I just like the idea that he's I guess I'm just projecting, really, but I like the idea that he's just past the point where it's starting to get a little hard, but he sort of pushes through it. Like, I always love the idea of, like, he's not compromised when he is out doing things, but, like, there's a moment when he comes home and he sits down and he's just, ugh, and it's just a little harder than it used to be. Like, I always think of him at that threshold, that precipice. I think of Superman in the same way, too, because try as you might to keep them in a certain age, you know, like, they've been around forever. So in my mind, I'm ascribing a lot of experience to them both, which you could not get over a certain period of time, I guess.
That's what they're trying to get rid of, like, de-aging. Yeah. But
I was looking at
they can be whatever age you want them to be.
That's true.
That's the beauty of it.
I was looking at a list of the Apollo astronauts because I wasn't sure who was still, you and I were talking, I wasn't sure who was still alive. But what I noticed is that when pretty much everyone who went to the moon was like 37 to 41. I think 42 is the oldest guy. And I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense for these guys. Like, that's where I picture the elder Superman. So, like, I don't know, how much older is Nightwing? How much older is Batman than Nightwing?
It's comic book time, you know? Like,
no, yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
With Bruce when he took on Dick, and then now Dick is in his nebulous 20s. Is he 22? Is he 25? Is he 28? You know, there's no way to, you know,
I think he's got to be like late 20s because he's got some awareness. I'm relating all of this to myself. Like, I'm like, oh, yeah, I was an idiot when I was 24. But like, I didn't know anything.
Raising a Batman.
Yeah. I'm no Batman.
Anyway, this was a lot of fun. It sets the table. You know, someone's hunting Batman and his family. It's just like Joker War all over again. And Robin has quit. So he's remembering all that in case you're someone who doesn't read Teen Titans because you don't know what happened. So this is sort of recapping it for the Batman readers that Damian quit the job. And so there's a meeting of the Bat family minus Damian, minus Tim, minus Stephanie on the roof of a building. And they all realize it's a trap. Meanwhile, Robin is investigating something, and that's where he sees the file about Bruce being 13 and Alfred being 35. And it was like, was the story great? No, I don't really care about this mirror character, but man, it was really good. It was really fun to look at.
It's beautiful. I hasten to say this because the character, again, I don't know why it exists, but Duke doesn't look awful in this.
No.
Like, it might be that they the colors are muted more, so it's not like this. I know he's the signal, whatever that is. But, you know, that yellow isn't just standing out completely out of place and everything.
Right.
Yeah.
No one's talking to you, Duke.
Why is Duke? Seriously though, what is Duke's story? He just showed up one time.
I honestly don't even remember. It was a long time ago, okay. And they never use him for anything. There's no character development. They give me no reason to care about him. He just sort of is always there in the background.
There should be like a Duke Mini. Do the Duke Mini. Change this around. No, but one that's good. Not.
It's just sort of like, other than him being sort of Black Robin, there was never really anything about him.
Right.
And so they just keep him there in the background. Yeah, like, I don't even know what he does.
That doesn't work. He signals.
Hey, I don't like the helmet.
No.
It's almost like Wolverine.
Yeah, no, I know, but I was like, well, at least I can't even think about how it looked like before. I like it. It looks ridiculous and everything else. At least it was at least closer to his head. I don't know. Doesn't matter.
Anyway, I don't know if this guy, Bill Quay, Evely, is going to draw this arc or keep drawing, but it was a terrific issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Jump on Detective Comics if you're curious at all about what's going on. And also, if you want to help the show, look, we're reaching the end of the year. It's going to be holiday time, pledge drive time. If you thought at all about supporting iFanboy and what we do and all the shows we put out, we put out a lot of shows. We put out 8 or 9 shows last month. You can do that at patreon.com/iFanboy. We appreciate every patron who comes along. Even if you just want to throw $1 in the pot every month, that really helps. We appreciate all of you. And you're the ones who unlock all the new shows, all the content, all the shows we do, the Media Explode show, the Books Explode show, the Talk Explode show. All those shows come out of the patrons' support, and we thank you. The next stretch goal, the next show, would be a G.I. Joe show for the animated series. We did that over the course of the lockdown when there were no new comics. People of a certain age really enjoyed it. So if you're of a certain age and you think you might enjoy a show about the G.I. Joe animated series, that's the next stretch goal. And after that is the quarterly barbecue show. Josh is making ribs right now. We could be talking about that on the quarterly barbecue show.
I prepared them last night. They will be grilled tonight. I bought a large package of them, so I'm going to have extra ribs.
Don't you kind of want to see how we would do a show like that in the climate we're in? The janky iPhone camera?
You know what? Doing it, yeah, probably. That makes sense. Yeah, I was thinking of producing a segment on rib making. Like, and while I cooked last night, I had planned that out. I was like, okay, I clipped the GoPro over there, and then.
So you know, that would be the kind of problem solving we'd have to do in the new age of the world if we hit the next stretch goal.
I don't have time to do that stuff, but I love doing that stuff. So, like every time I look at the episodes, the iFanboy, I love video editing. It's the thing I think I am best at, you know, and. But I don't want to do it.
It's time consuming. I had to do it recently for work, and I was like, oh, I forgot how long this takes.
Well, there you have to also teach yourself how to do everything again. At least for a little while, we were proficient.
Yeah, I was talking, I was using Adobe Premiere again, which is what we use to do our show. And I was like, I remember this just enough to be dangerous. Just enough to screw something up.
I don't have that. Now I have Final Cut, which, you know, kind of is like that, but I have to teach myself all over again.
My previous job, I used Final Cut for some videos, and I hated it. Because mm-hmm. It was just close enough to Premiere.
Yeah.
But just not where I kept screwing things up, because I would use the Premiere keys, and it would...
So you didn't hate it because it was bad. It was just because it was just...
No, I hated it because my brain was taught on one thing, and it was just close enough to not be as quickly as I could.
That's my only problem with an Android phone. I'm sure they're fine, but I can't learn that again. It's not going to happen.
Anyway... These are the kind of discussions we have on our monthly hangouts, which we originally were just for the patrons. This year have been for everyone. We're going to go back to them just being for the patrons next year. But there's all kinds of benefits to being a patron, including the voting on the patron pick and also doing the hangouts. And we have our Discord people and our Facebook people and our different groups, and they are at war currently. And it's fun. It's a good community, good people. All that happens at patreon.com/iFanboy. T-shirts, iFanboy.threadless.com, 8 designs. Listen, holidays are coming up. You know, you want to get your grandmother a Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters shirt or Stay Home and Read Comic shirt. She would appreciate that.
I wore both those shirts this week. They're fine shirts.
They're good shirts. So those are over at iFanboy.threadless.com. iFanboy logo, Herm, Pick of the Podcast, ratings. If one is Electro, GDAT, Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters. Stay Home and Read Comics. We didn't do another new one this year. Listen, life was consumed by... two things. Nothing Makes Sense, Nothing Matters, to Stay Home and Read Comics. So that's sort of what we just left it as for now. But as soon as a new shirt idea comes our way, we'll put it up there. And also, there are all kinds of merchandise, not just shirts. But if you want to help us out directly, ifanboy.com/support. As the year comes to the end, if you want to just throw a couple of dollars in the tip jar, we always appreciate that. If you don't want to be a patron, that's totally fine. And ifanboy.com/Amazon for all your Booksplode needs and all your holiday shopping. It's holiday shopping time. We appreciate that all the help we get through all the various means to keep the show going, keeps the bills paid, and we do appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Again,
another new book,
Dungeons and Dragons at the Spine of the World, number one, by Amy Garcia and AJ Mendez. I feel like I've seen those names before, but
I've seen Amy Garcia's name for sure.
Yeah.
AJ Mendez used to host Extra.
I don't even know if that's a joke.
It is a joke. Mendez?
AC Slater?
Yeah.
He hosted one of those, right?
He still does, I think.
Okay. I wouldn't know. I in sort of like, what am I going to read this? Because it seemed like it was going to be a really light week for me, and I apparently just added a bunch of things on. And so I saw a Dungeons & Dragons book that was number one, and I thought, well, that could be all right. And it was all right.
Is this IDW?
IDW. And it really is like, there's a thing that happens at the beginning where a bunch of people are killed and there's one survivor, and then a giant comes out of the woods and picks up the guy who's like a wizard, and then they go into town and they meet a scout and they form a group and they go on a quest together. It's 100% by the numbers, but it looked pretty good, and it was fun. I might keep reading it. It's just short of being too routine, but it's also so routine in a way that it was kind of comforting.
I have no problem with the Dungeons and Dragons book.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's basically Lord of the Rings, but slightly different, but
when I was a kid, this was like my favorite genre, was this sort of swords and sorcery dragon.
Did you ever play Hero Quest? Was that a?
I never played any of them. I played one game of Dungeons & Dragons in my life, and I've never been.
Hero Quest, I think it was called Hero Quest. It was a board game, but it was basically the same thing. You know, you could be a barbarian, or you could be a wizard, or you could be a thief, and it was basically like Dungeons & Dragons, but in board game form.
I should get onto one of those virtual Dungeons & Dragons games with people and learn how.
I can get you into one. I know there's a big one here in LA that friend of mine runs. She's the DM, she's the GM for it, and it features a rotating cast of comic creators whose names people would know.
I'm not experienced, however. I can tell you happened. Was somebody bought me the...
They're not going to bully you at Dungeons & Dragons. That's the last place you're going to get bullied.
They... Glendorf, the... No. somebody bought me the big... the book, the manual at some point, and I read it. Like, I just read it like you would read a book. And they had... I noticed that in Portland, which was the closest city to me when I was a kid, they were having, like, a thing. And I went
Portland, Maine,
yeah. I signed up, and I went... I was, like, 12. And I got like in one of the beginner games, and it starts, and the guy, the DM at the end of the table, like went into character real hard, and I couldn't handle it. I was like, oh, this isn't for me. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm sure there are games where it is for me, but that one was too, and like he stared at me. You're like,
I think there's various degrees of Dungeons & Dragons. Like, one I believe is more casual. Our buddy Jeff Cannata hosts a show on the Caffeine streaming network called Dungeon Run, which is they're all in character because they're all like LA actors, and it's great, but I don't think they're all like that.
Yeah, I think that's
I never played like full-on campaigns. I think I played a couple of times as a kid, and then my friends and I played Star Wars role-playing game much more than we played Dungeons and Dragons, which is the same metric, the same engine of play. It's just with Star Wars characters.
I think my problem is I'm very self-aware, and I kind of have to get over myself enough to do those things, but once I do, I think it'll be fun. Yeah. Hawkman.
Anyway, Hawkman 29 is the final issue of a surprisingly really good series, especially towards the end. Robert Venditti, Fernando Pessoa, Claire Albert, Jeremy Cox, Rob Lee again. And so, as you may recall, because this was Pick of the Week a couple issues ago, Hawkman, Hawkwoman had their final fight against their nemesis. They came back to life no longer regenerating. Like, they're no longer going to be reincarnated throughout the time, so this is their final life, and they chose to come back in the past with the Justice Society. So here they've got one more fight against one more bad guy, and it may be the same guy. That was a little unclear. Hawkman gets stabbed in the stomach. You think he's gonna die because if he dies, and he ends up fighting back, and they beat the guy, and you know, it's sort of your standard sort of final fight with your villain. They have a nice sweet moment as a couple together. They fly off into the sunset, and then we have sort of like a 6 feet under scenario where we get to see them throughout the years with the Justice Society, fighting with the Green Lanterns, fighting in another dimension, and then all of a sudden we jump forward and they're both old with white hair and somehow still alive in the 40th century. So I don't know whether that's all about. I guess they lost their ability to reincarnate, maybe now they're immortal. But it was just a really sweet ending to these two characters' story. I mean, obviously they're not going away, but as their book is going away, it was a really nice ending, and I always appreciate a 6 Feet Under ending. Like a sort of montage of their lives together. And I love the fact that they chose to go back, not in the quote-unquote present, but they went back to the 40s with the Justice Society. That was a really smart decision.
Cool.
And I was really shocked by the ending. Like, whoa, what? And then, so who knows? Maybe they'll show up in Bendis's Legion of Superheroes book.
I have what I think is going to happen is that people are going to say, "You guys didn't talk about superhero books at all this week, because I'm talking about all these other books instead."
Uh-huh.
And they're not going to like it if they get what they asked for. That's what I think is going to happen.
Let's talk about 50-50 this week.
That's fine. It's going to be different. Why do you guys hate Marvel? You watch. I don't know. I just picked that randomly. Bill and Ted Are Doomed, number 3, came out. Are you not? I can't imagine.
No, I didn't keep reading.
Okay. So in the last issue, they were booked at a black metal fest in Scandinavia. Where the crowd turned on them because they're false metal. And then this issue, they're sort of all going at, like, all the crowd are going after them to kill them. And they find out that they're in, like, a town that is dedicated to black metal and death to false metal. And they're running away from the people.
I assume that most Scandinavian towns are like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought it was quite charming and fun. I think because I had watched the movie directly before I read the book before, I had a hard time squaring them. But now that I'm sort of away from that, it's ridiculous. And had to say my favorite joke of the week is that they are, you know, they escape from the festival, not unlike the bus of Stillwater leaves after, as Mark Maron chases after them. And then the bus breaks down and they have to run out in the woods, and at one point Bill says run to the hills, and then Ted says run for your lives, which is a very low-key Iron Maiden joke, and I laughed, and it was stupid, but it was really I really dug it.
They're charming. What are you gonna
Yep, it was a good time.
So we had two Spider-Man books, The Amazing Spider-Man 52 and 52.LR.
I think I didn't realize that. I only read one of them.
Yeah, they both came out this week. The LR book was the side character, so Doctor Strange team up with Black Cat.
Oh, okay. So, right. Okay, so I read 52. I just thought it was like a repackaging, like one of those director's cuts.
No, the LRs are the side, you know, Marvel used to do that shit with the dot whatever. And so they've been doing that for a while with this miniseries.
It's terrible.
You hate this.
I hate it. Yeah, no, I didn't even realize that. But anyway, the point though is that I have tried to hang on through this, and I think I can't do it anymore. This will be the last one of these until you tell me to go back and read it, because it was so good for such a long time. And and like the last few, I was like, I don't know. And then as we get into this part where you've got the kindred and everything is sort of dreamy, and it's no.
Oh, so you may not know you may not know a lot of things, because it was in the LR books, I believe, where it was revealed that it's Harry.
They said it's no. Harry. They had said that earlier. I saw that.
I
knew
everyone
that.
Assumed it. It was like the most easily assumed thing that's been going on lately. But and all I think that's where it was the big reveal. I think was in one of the LR books.
All the Spider-Man friends are gross monsters with disgusting mouths.
That's over now.
Yeah. And it's no fun. Like,
no,
that's the part that it should be. It's no fun. It's all just like tortured soul shit, and I just it's such a bummer. And I'm just hoping it's just an arc, and then I'll come back around. But I can't.
Yeah, in the other book, I believe Mary Jane is back.
That happened in this one.
I don't know. I read them back to back.
She takes a cab, and the new Mary Jane doesn't go check on Peter. She goes and gets food. I was like, oh, so she's inconsiderate now.
Well, she's a movie star. So obviously, I mean, I will say that I was really bummed when Ryan Otley left, but I think Patrick Gleason is terrific.
Yeah, no,
he's great. I think he's perfect for this book.
It's not a bad comic book. I just don't want this kind of comic book.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Yeah. I don't enjoy this particular arc, but I think the one saving grace for me is I think Patrick Gleason is really terrific.
And, yes.
I mean, you won't have to talk about it anymore because Peter is killed at the end of this issue. So.
Sure. That always takes.
I didn't see it on CNN, but I assume this particular arc is going to go through the rest of the year, by the way.
Remember when that kind of thing made mainstream news?
Well, because he's not really dead. But
well, I know that, but like either way, they'd be like, "Oh, let's talk about this." Remember when there would be fun stories on the news sometimes?
There's 6 more issues of this arc, it looks like.
Jesus Christ! Yeah, that was the other thing. I think there was a checklist at the end. And I was like, "Forget it."
You've missed 3 of these LR books.
I read one. I think I read 1 or 2 of them, and I was confused. I was like, "Where the hell's Spider-Man?" I didn't understand the system. And I guess that's on me, but it shouldn't have to be. Shouldn't have to be hard.
So those are the books. Listen, there's a lot of books this week. I could have talked about how much I enjoyed Superman. I could have talked about how conflicted I was about Injustice Year Zero. I could have talked about, I'm just scrolling through my books here, how much I enjoyed American Vampire more this week.
I'm with you on all of those things. Everything you just said.
Flash is like this really strangely solid superhero story that is so low stakes that it's almost alien in the modern age. So there's a lot to talk about, but we can't talk about it all. We have a format. We have a producer that yells at us if we go over the time. So let's talk about the patron pick. Taskmaster number 1 from Marvel Comics was the patron pick. Patrons over at patreon.com/ifanboy. We mentioned you guys earlier, and every single patron can vote to add a book to the rundown. Any level you give gives you access to the voting mechanism. And this issue was written by Jed McKay, an art by Alessandro Vitti, with colors by Guru EFX and Joe Lasagna. Is that Caramagna?
Yep.
Is the letterer. I can't make those jokes because Ron's not here.
Joey Lasagna. I guarantee you somebody calls him Joey Lasagna.
Well, he's from Jersey, right?
I mean, he wouldn't be offended by that. Although he'd rather be called Joey Donuts.
So, well, that's fine too. Mm-hmm. Oh, Donuts.
That's a good modern name.
Taskmaster, number 1. We make a lot of Taskmaster jokes on the show because, A, he's got a fun power set,
mm-hmm.
and B, he has one of the all-time great, dumb, awesome costumes.
And that's the key. Like, it's dumb. Like, it's really like a mishmash of everything that people thought was cool about costumes in 1971.
And the thing is, so I saw this coming out. Jed McKay, I believe, wrote Black Cat? He wrote one of those books.
Yes, yes, yes.
One of those fringe books. And again, we talked about this last week. Marvel's strength is on the fringe. It's on the fringe books. It's on the smaller characters.
Which you know, that's what it was originally. You know, it was like, hey, how about superheroes with real problems? Like, they were fringe characters. And then they changed into icons, but that was the deal.
And so I'm finding most of my enjoyment there. Not all of it, but most of it. So here, question for you. Were you going to read this book without the patron pick?
I definitely would have read this book without the patron
pick. Yeah, I'd actually, in fact, already read it before the patrons picked it. So the conceit here is, I love the opening scene where there's a 4th annual mafia celebrity doubles.
Magia.
In New Jersey. Well, yeah, it's the mafia. In New Jersey. And I like the idea that they hire supervillain ringers. So one guy's got Bullseye. And the other guy's got Taskmaster, who's been watching Tiger Woods videos and Jack Nicklaus videos. And that was just a funny joke. And then someone tries to kill Taskmaster, and he gets away, and we find out that someone has supposedly murdered Maria Hill and framed Taskmaster for it. And so now Black Widow's trying to kill him. That's the person who tried to kill him at the golf course. And so not Nick Fury is helping him because he knows that Taskmaster didn't do it. So it's like Spies on the Run story with Taskmaster in the middle of it.
It's Midnight Run.
Yes, kind of, yes.
Yeah. This might have been my pick of the week. If not, like, it was close. I went between them. It was just stupid fun, and I think the character is very silly, and he gets played in a bunch of different ways. Like, he can be played as like insanely ruthless, efficient killer,
yep.
or he gets played as the, listen, I'm just a job I get hired for, you know, but he's going to do it. You know, in this, he's much more self-aware. And there was a lot of really good dialogue and sort of funny jokes at one point. Like,
Jed McKay's good.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. Terrific. At one point, Bullseye calls him store brand. It's really funny. He's just an imitation. He's like, right. He's generic cola. But, you know, and Nick Fury shows up and he, you know, he's calling him Tony. And I'm like, that brings everything right down to that level. And it's like that thing where, you know, one guy's on one side or another, but they're kind of colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea that, you know, like the big bad, quote unquote, in this book is the Black Widow.
Right.
And, you know, like, he's concerned that she's after him. And I like that sort of gives her due in that way. Have you ever known her to stop coming? No. Okay. You know, and then their goal is they have three people that they have to get to, which is G.I. Yeah. Joe. I mean, it's every, you know, cliche that is great about 80s superhero stories.
And done really well.
Yes.
So for me, the calibration in the beginning, and it didn't take long, was to what you said, was that I'm used to like ruthless, scary Taskmaster. Like when he shows up, it's scary. So like kind of jokey, hapless Taskmaster at first. I was like, what? But then I, you know, got over that pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So that was the only thing I had to recalibrate. Otherwise, I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah.
It was fun. It's a ton of fun.
Like the art was perfect for it. I don't know if I would have loved this art on...
No.
Like if the art was trying to be, it was on a really serious book, I would think it would be overblown. But the fact that it's a little goofy, I think it works really well with this.
Yeah. I didn't love it. I think there's a couple of weird faces, but it worked for what it needed to do. You're right. Like if this was on like Captain America, I wouldn't like it.
Right.
But it works here.
It's going to be a fish out of water story. And it's oddly, like, the guy's super competent. He can do whatever anybody else does if he sees it. Although they've added levels to it here. Like, can mm-hmm. you do their body language? Well, for this kind of thing, I'd have to see them in person and not video. And I was like, well, that's a really interesting little bit. You know, and if you look at the cover, also, like, he has facial expressions under the skull. Like, when he hears it's the Black Widow, his face is like, oh! which is letting us be silly. The cover for the next issue has, is that Hyperion?
I think so,
Squadron
yeah,
Supreme the, guy. So, yeah. You know, he's holding him by the neck way up in the air. You know, guy's in over his head. You know, this guy who's super competent, you know, he's going to find the level of being, and that turns it into, like, an action comedy.
Well, he's Marvel's Deathstroke, the Terminator, right?
Yeah.
So this is like doing a silly comedy with Deathstroke. Now, would I want him to be like that all the time? No. But for this particular miniseries, it's fine.
It was super fun. I had a great time reading it. And it wasn't because it was like great. You know, it wasn't like, wow, this is amazing. It was just fun.
Yeah.
Super fun.
So Taskmaster, I assume it's going to be a 6-issue miniseries. I just assume everything is. Are you sticking with this for the duration?
Absolutely. I mean, I can't say it's for the duration for sure, but I probably.
I'm as well. What's the ratings on Taskmaster number one? Ratings out of 5. Ratings.
I feel like there's an objective rating and there's a Josh rating.
Yeah, just give it whatever your rating is. It doesn't matter. It's all subjective.
I'm going to give it a 4. I'm going 4.
I think 4 as well.
Yeah. It's super fun.
So there you go. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go to vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron can vote, but if you give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own patron power live on the show, like these two.
Jonathan Sturm, Sturm, and his friend Drang, always has an appropriate and impressive quotation for a given situation. So, hey, we've got to pay this bill. Well, I believe it was Samuel Johnson who said... And then it's impressive, you know. It was Proust, I believe, who spoke that.
One of those people. He's just it's a power.
It's a thing. It comes natural. But I mean, the key to a quotation like that is to not sound as if you're being impressive, but to have it actually be apropos. And give context and wisdom, and that's what it does. It would be King Baudouin thought about this in a certain way, was that he and the people listening would be like, it really doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not question. It's not like this guy. Ugh. Yes,
is it? It's not all just famous quotes or famous people, is it?
Appropriate.
Appropriate.
Appropriate and impressive. I mean, it's not just like. I mean, I guess like Bill from the Jiffy Mart said. you know, but only if it was truly enlightening. He hasn't read all these books. He's not like up on William Butler Yeats.
Mm-hmm.
It's to the fullest extent. It comes from within him, this accumulation of human knowledge from some of the greatest minds.
Only in quote form.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He may be dumb as a hammer otherwise.
I'm not saying you are, Jonathan. We just don't know.
Well.
Stephen A.M., his power is that he has prehensile eyelashes.
Ugh.
So they can stretch out, and he can swing with them. He could smack you in the face. He could grab something from a counter. He's got prehensile eyelashes.
All right. Do they grow? Do they retract?
Yeah, they retract back in.
Okay.
So, like, we'll say they go, like, 50 feet. And so he could swing through the city in his eyelashes.
I wonder what that looks like.
It's disturbing.
In a cutaway form, like, where they retract to. Like, do they stay in a straight line and go down his back, or do they bunch up? In
they
which
roll
case,
back in, like on a roll bar.
I think that's the best way to go. It's efficient because if it was just a bunch, you could get a tangle, and that's going to lead to the mother of all ingrown hairs.
Well, you know, someone could theoretically could step on it while they're out, and he'd be stuck. And the thing is, they look fine, but they're strong.
Let me ask you this: what what kind of sound do they make when they're coming in and out? Is there a slurpy kind? Because there's moisture involved with that.
Yeah, especially he's been crying. You know,
oh, God. You know, I'm a little messed up in terms of the body horror right now because I've been watching The Americans, and they're in this area where they're doing gross shit, like they fold up a lady and put her in a suitcase, and then Philip yanks a tooth out of what's her name's head, and like the sounds and those episodes are back to back, and the sounds of that are like they really got to us.
It often is the sounds.
Oh, people yeah, because they don't show. Well, they did show the legs getting. Oh. Tommy Schlamme directed that tooth pulling scene.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, I was impressed. On the other hand, I was like, please don't manipulate me. This is awful. Sorry.
It's patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and give $5 or higher and you get your own superpower live on the show. Thanks to Jonathan and Steven. Hope you enjoy your powers. So now you decide. We're at the edge.
No, we can do it. We left this for last week. So let's.
Aaron A. from Texas. Since you guys have had one of the most popular comic book podcasts for almost 2 decades, have you ever thought about your influence in the comic community? Do you ever have creators or companies ask you for input on stories or directions? Have you ever felt like creators are trying to get your attention with characters or ideas to try to get into the weekly pick? Also, this is totally different. Hypothetically, if the Mafia existed in New York, which we all know they don't, are there any shows, books, or podcasts you could recommend that document their modern involvement and influence in crime? Bonus question.
Wow.
Do you think iFanboy has any influence on the organized crime in New York, or does it have any influence on the iFanboy organization? Senator? I plead the fifth. What was he into that he had two wildly divergent ideas that he threw into one email?
You know what it tells me? It tells me he's been thinking about both of those things for a long time.
Yeah.
And even if he wasn't necessarily aware of them, informing, and he went to write this, and it just came out. Who was the guy who testified in the Kefauver hearings who, like, had the glasses on, and he just went and told them everything?
Valachi?
I think it was. Yes, it was Joe Valachi.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, wow. Where did I pull that from?
I mean, like, what's funny is that I couldn't think of the name, and then you said it, and I was like, Joe Valachi, I knew what you meant.
It's just from growing up.
And it's hard to get, you don't want to get Joe Valachi mixed up with Joe Profaci, which is a different thing. Okay, so we probably don't think about the influence we have on the comic community. I think there was a time, probably in the late 2000s, where people would try to get our attention more. It doesn't really happen at all anymore.
Yeah, yeah. The world has changed.
Yeah.
I mean, when we started, things are different now than when they were, when we were like a full-on going, concern with 7 shows a week and a daily website and daily content on the website. And podcasts were new and the comics community was really embracing them and trying to, you know, that we had a lot more interaction with the professional community then than we do now. It's a different, the world is different, and also what we do is different.
Yeah.
We used to see them all regularly at shows, yeah, you know, 7-8 times a year at comic conventions, and, or, you know, when we lived in New York, we'd go to the offices for, you know, for me to meet the PR team or for whatever reason. And this is a different, it was a different world. I don't think any of that happens now. I don't think anyone's trying to get our attention. I don't think anyone's trying to,
I think people are still aware of it. I know that people still listen or did, but it's not the same. I mean, like, it was largely more about, we formed a lot of personal relationships that were just helpful in a bunch of ways, but I can think of one guy who kind of does that and cares about it. Even he's given up to a certain extent.
There was one guy for a while who, and this is at least 10 years ago, or was 10 years ago, who would occasionally run ideas past me.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't, you know, that was a very unusual thing. And I was very uncomfortable by it. Well, that literally just what I said just happened.
Yeah. Well, it says companies or whatever, but, you know, it's. Yeah.
Companies would never do that.
No, never, never, never. And.
There's no legal problems with that. They could never do that.
And it's interesting because the people who I know, and I haven't seen anybody in forever, and I'm off social media now for the most part, so I'm friendly with some folks. I've texted. There's a couple of people who, like, I can talk to directly. But like what we do here tends to be very separate from that thing. Like, I have one guy who I consider to be a pretty good friend, and he respects, you know, like, if we give a really good review to something, he's like, oh, you really, because he knows that when we say something on the show, we really mean it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
It's a different the separation. It's just different. We are different. We are not running into these people all the time. We're not talking to them all the time. It's not that way anymore,
mm-hmm.
which is fine. I don't think we should be having those conversations. I don't think people should be trying to get our attention, folks. I don't think
people have always been pretty damn respectful. And I can think of a handful, you know, count on one hand, where somebody at a social event and somebody like tried to pitch to me. And honestly, like, that turns me off from them forever. Like, I can think of one guy, and he came up to me right away with, like, the hard pitch for the thing. Two guys. Mm-hmm. And I think of it every time I see their name on something, and I don't like it. It doesn't mean I don't give it a fair shot or whatever. And there's been good work, but bad work also from those folks.
I mean, it's a very small community. Yes. So in the beginning, when this was a new thing, and we were, you know, one of the bigger names in the beginning, and we had a lot of output, and, you know, it was a different world. Mm-hmm. And now it's like podcasts have been around for 15 years now, so it's just part of the, you know, part of the background. So
I would say the only way that affects what we do here is relationships with people. They help me with the interview podcasts because A, I can be like, hey, introduce me to so and so, you know, and then B, if I have a good relationship with somebody and they're on the podcast, it's better. It's more
I'm
fun.
Not saying we don't have relationships. I'm just saying no one's trying to. No one's writing for us or to get our attention.
In fact,
may be occasionally a joke or reference. Obviously, these things have happened. We've been murder victims in a Batman book. We were in the background of Green Arrow, Green Lantern, like Green Arrow, Black Canary. Like things have obviously happened.
I'm an officially named Star Wars system.
Right, but no one's like, I'm gonna write the story because Josh is really gonna like it. Like, or if they do, it's just.
Well, I have
someone Josh knows and it's a joke, but it's not like no one's really doing
that. I've had that happen. I saw a Jaws joke in a book and I was like, is that for me? They're like, yes. And I was like, that's awesome.
Well, the joke is one thing and no one's writing an arc. Nope. No one's writing a story arc of a
character. Absolutely not. What's interesting is that there's a couple of guys who are fairly successful now and they were fans. They stopped listening. They were like, I can't listen anymore.
Right.
Like, yeah. So.
No. But yeah. And then the last two questions. First of all, there's no mafia.
There's no mafia.
So there's nothing that could influence us or vice versa.
You know, we don't have to say that because we're not Sicilian. We can't be involved anyway.
Right.
So we're not subject to Omerta. Or that a real thing?
Listen, we all used to live in New York, and now we don't. What does that tell you? What have we fled? What did we have to flee?
My real name is Alfonso Ricardarero.
Josh is currently reading a book about the mafia.
Yeah, I'm listening to an audiobook of Selwyn Rabb's Five Families, which is very in-depth, and it sort of goes through the whole history of the American mafia from the inception, sort of around the time of... It didn't really get going until Prohibition. And it,
that was the juice that got...
Yeah, it really goes into the five families of New York specifically, and how the lineage of those happens and how they work and what the folks are like. It is riveting. It is totally fascinating. And
you name the five families.
I keep doing this in the middle of it. I'm like, okay, because they change names. So
yeah.
Gambino, Columbo, Lucchese. Ooh. I can name the original five bosses, but now that they change from there, and then I kind of forget because my
Bonanno?
Bonanno, but okay, that stayed Bonanno?
It's still Bonanno, yeah.
Okay, because he left. He retired. He was forced into retirement.
I always forget the fifth one.
Yeah. I can't remember off the top of my head. That book's really good as an overview. I can't. What was the name of that? Is it Mafia Wars? You sent me a book.
Mafia War, yeah.
Mafia War.
Wars?
I will look it up before the end of the show so we can say it. But it's about the garbage carting industry, which mm-hmm. sounds like the most uninteresting thing on earth, by the way. But it's about...
It's one of the things that brought them down temporarily.
Yeah.
And, or at least took them down a notch, was the carting, losing the carting.
Yeah, but even so, like... The idea of what the influence of these people is on the everyday lives of New Yorkers, and then also how that expands out, and this is a very specific thing, is garbage carting, and I had no idea invasive.
Takedown.
Yes. The book is called
The Fall of the Last Mafia Empire.
There you go.
Written by the undercover cop who got involved in that situation. That was a great book.
Yeah, and boy, I mean, like the all the ways that it has infiltrated and affected and cost just regular people all over the place is really fascinating. And as you like in Five Families, there's all these people who show up who are still in our lives today. You know, like Giuliani, you know, comes from those investigations, and to see what has happened to him in that period.
He made his bones.
Robert Mueller is in through there. Like you see Anthony Quinn and Mickey Rourke. Came and sat in the galley for John Gotti's trial on his side, his support. Like, it's all these crazy things.
Oh, I still remember when I was in high school in Queens when he was on trial, mm-hmm. and we talked about it in one class. I don't remember. It was probably like history class or government class or whatever. And I still remember this one girl named Holly, super Queens, super nice, super Queens. Mm-hmm. He's just a nice man. I don't know why they're bothering him.
Yep.
It's just like, me not being from Queens, mm-hmm. but going to high school in Queens, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
All right. This is where we are. Bonanno, Columbo, Gambino, Genovese.
Genovese. There it is. Yeah. And I learned a ton about it. So I'm sort of knee deep in that right now. And it's really interesting. You know what? I actually just watched The Irishman again.
I've had that book on my shelf for a while. It keeps taunting me.
I sent you one of those books.
I think you sent me this one.
Okay. Yeah. And it's because we talked about Goodfellas a lot. And actually, in the Goodfellas Minute podcast, we really talk about a lot of this stuff. So that.
Yeah, by the way, if you are interested at all in this conversation, Aaron or anyone else, and you're interested in the mafia, we did a whole podcast called Goodfellas Minute, in which we talked about Goodfellas 1 minute at a time and a lot of the mafia history, because it was all based on real life, supposedly.
Goodfellas is a very good idea about sort of the street level mafia, how it works, what those guys are like, what it is. I mean, it's dramatized. And then The Irishman is sort of a top down sort of thing, like how it works at governmental and systemized and large levels. Yeah. In fact, in many ways, it's a better movie in that way, and sort of teaching you how those things, because all of it was real. Like, all those people are real, the murder of Joe Gallo, all that stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, I want to go back to Sparks Steakhouse is what I'm getting at.
That was one of the best steak dinners we ever had at Sparks.
Yep.
For me, that's the one I think about the most. Mm-hmm. Great atmosphere, great steak, great night. Nobody was murdered outside.
When this is over, we're doing that. You come out, I'll drive down.
We used to, when you all lived near each other, at the end of the year, our fanboy tradition was in December, me and Josh Moran would go get steak dinner to celebrate the year. And we'd always go to a different steakhouse in New York. And one of the best ones was Sparks.
Where Paul Castellano was brutally murdered outside of it in the 80s.
By John Gotti's people.
Yeah.
All right. Contact at ifanboy.com. From Aaron wrote us in. If you have comics questions or apparently mafia questions, we can answer them. Contact at ifanboy.com. Thanks for writing in.
Also, if either Connor or I should disappear, call the FBI.
We've said too much.
Did you know that nobody even acknowledged it was a real thing until the 70s? And then nobody even did anything until the 80s. That is amazing.
That's the joke. There's no mafia.
Oh, my God. I hadn't realized that was actually true.
Yes.
And that's completely J. Edgar Hoover's fault.
Yeah. It was a whole thing.
Anyway, actually, the Kennedys tried to do something about it. And then
Robert Kennedy tried to get him, and that's, the murder his brother.
Salvatore, what's his name? The Miami guy?
Trafficante,
Salvatore Trafficante Jr.
Trafficante and the guy in Chicago.
Sam Giancana, who was dating a girl at the same time that Kennedy was.
Yep.
Same girl. Okay.
Talk about pressure.
Yeah. Talk about ego.
Yeah.
Are we on the announcements?
We're on the announcements.
Okay.
Yeah.
Be too bad if something were to happen to your podcast. There is a Booksplode that this will probably be the last time we talk about that. That Connor and I did on Pulp by Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker, and it is a lovely sort of Western, Western person, early century crime stuff. Really beautiful animated.
One of our unique Western stories here.
Yes.
Read.
Animated Brain Trust did Batman: Death in the Family. For your crowbar needs.
Yep.
And our last media explode was Ted Lasso and other assorted things that we talked about, but mostly the fact that Ted Lasso is the panacea that we need for a broken world right now.
Can I just say that one of the most rewarding things that's happened this year is several people watched Ted Lasso based on that show. They talked about it in the Discord chat, on Facebook. We've gotten emails, several people, and they're all like, this is the best. And that makes me so happy. Because they wouldn't have watched it otherwise. That's all I care about right now is watching. People should watch Ted Lasso. I almost started watching it again last night, but I was like, no. I got other things to watch.
I've watched it twice. one and a half times. Year.
This is November. We're at the end of the year. It's time to talk about the holiday schedule because the people are new to the show. They may not know that there is a holiday schedule. So I believe 1, 2, 3, 4. There's only 4 more Picks of the Week shows for this year. 4 more. So here's what we got going on. At some point, maybe there'll be a Talksplode that Josh owes.
I'm working on it.
The next hangout will be November 21st. And then we have the Pick of the Week 758 on November 22nd. And then we have our Media Explode show on November 27th. And then 2 weeks of Picks of the Week, 759, 760 on November 29th and December 6th. And then our final Booksplode show of the year will come out on December 10th. We'll have our final hangout of the year on December 12th. We'll have our final Pick of the Week of the year on December 13th. That's 3 things happening within 4 days. And then the All Media Year in Spectacular show, which will take the place of the final Media Explode show and is our traditional wrap-up show we've done since the very first year of this show, will come out on December 20th. And then we'll be off for 2 weeks. No shows again until Pick of the Week 762 comes back on January 10th. So
you
that
expect
is
people
the
to take notes during this part, or
I'm just saying that's in case you're wondering, that's what's going to happen the rest of the year. We take the last 2 weeks, the last week off, and the first week off for holiday time with our families, and then we come back fresh, reinvigorated, and loving comics again
with a huge pile of backlog. So every week we have to read for twice as long.
Well, that's you. I read as they come out.
You are not a man with the responsibilities that I am, my friend.
I actually don't always read. I think last time it was like I took a whole week off and then I read 2 weeks. I
read piecemeal, but I usually don't catch up. is what I do. I'm like, oh, I'll just read a book here and there, which is very nice. But usually there's so much that by the time we start doing shows again, I still have to double up.
Anyway, that's the holiday schedule. We'll keep updating it every week towards the end. But I wanted to make sure everyone aware of what's coming out for the rest of the year. And we'll be back and having fun.
Get the iFanboy.com to find all of our podcasts. You can comment on the shows. You can look at all the backlog stuff. You can see every podcast we did and every article ever. I'd say, you know, it's worth just searching Chimsky and reading what people used to get mad about before there were things to get mad about. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out by liking facebook.com/iFanboy and following at iFanboy on Twitter and at iFanboy Comics on Instagram, which also features the best of the week in panels, etc. We are only on Instagram, Connor and myself, at this point for the time being. He is C.S. Kilpatrick and I am J.A. Flanagan. If you were on Facebook, I didn't unfriend you. I unfriended everybody. I unfriended Facebook. So that's why.
I haven't used Facebook in years other than to do the iFanboy stuff. I'm in the process of probably also leaving it.
Yeah.
So that may mean also that the facebook.com/iFanboy goes away as well, just because there'll be no one to update it. So that may be a thing that happens. I don't know. I also wanted to mention, because I saw it when I went to post the pic, that many people are asking us questions on Twitter. And since Josh and I are not on it regularly, we don't see them. It's not that we're ignoring you, we just don't see them. So, again, the best way always is to get your question answered is to email contact@ifanboy.com. I see that every day. I have an alert on my phone every time I get a new email. I see it. So, we're just not on Twitter. So if you ask questions to iFanboy, we're there updating announcements, but we're not on it. So we just don't see your questions.
Yeah. You can subscribe to our YouTube page at youtube.com/iFanboy. And as we go through the old video show re-uploads this past week, you could watch a mini on the pick of the week, which was Justice League of America number 20, written by Dwayne McDuffie.
Yeah, it was.
And that gives you an idea about how long ago that was. And then there's a show, Why Do We Love Superheroes?
Mm-hmm.
Where we theoretically explore the idea of why we love superheroes.
Why do people love them? And also, the WonderCon 2008 show, why is that notable? It's our first high-definition show.
Oh.
So the transition from...
WonderCon 2008 is really the big turning point for us. Because that was the first show I did after I quit my job and you and I were doing it full-time. Like, that was the thing.
Right. And then soon after, I think the...
that was the Darwin.
Minis start.
Yep.
So anyway, that's the first HD show. I remember... when we started uploading these shows that the patrons unlocked to YouTube, someone's comment on one of the first shows was like, I remember your show looking better. It didn't start looking better until this episode because that's when HD happened.
Well, also, people didn't expect it to look better because we didn't have SD wasn't unusual then. Now, in retrospect, it looks much worse, but, you know, that was just...
Right, well, the point is now it starts looking slightly better.
Yeah.
Even if the camera equipment is not as good as what some random fucking YouTuber has now in their house, but and much bigger and heavier.
That's true.
But you can find those shows at youtube.com/iFanboy. It's a lot of fun seeing the old content, seeing the old shows for me. It's like, oh, right, that one. I remember that one.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes it's like, we did a show about that.
Look at those chillins.
Why are they wearing shorts? If you like the show, write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. It's a great way to help our show, any podcast you listen to. Leaving a rating or a review is a great way to help them, helps people find shows, helps the algorithm make it available for people. It's all an algorithm game. We're just playing it, and that's one way to help us. And even better than that is tell your friends. Word of mouth is a great way to help spread the iFanboy word, and we do appreciate everyone who recommends the show. We do appreciate that, and we're done.
You know what's hard about trying to game the algorithm? Mm. I'm not sure what an algorithm is.
If you play the algorithm game, you lose.
You win or you die.
You just lose. You lose. Yeah. Fair. There's no winning the algorithm game, but we play it anyway, because that's what else are we going to do? We're all slaves to the algorithm. All right. That's our happy note for the show. There is no mafia. We're all playing the algorithm game. And I'm Connor.
I'm Josh. Goodbye.
Don't come over.